It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 258. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News comes on the show to chat about Taysom's legacy and the basketball meltdown against Utah Valley. Matt and I then discuss Taysom, potential bowl opponents, the college football playoff, and the fallout from the UVU loss. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout, and listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, Deseret News reporter Brandon Gurney. Brandon, welcome back to the podcast.
Always good to be with you.
So, you know, we'll get this unpleasantness out of the way first. So let's start with the basketball game versus Utah Valley this last weekend. Tell me, how much panic should fans be in after this loss, or is it just one of those things that was inevitable to happen with such a young team?
Probably a little bit of both. I think considering the opponent, just being in-state down the street and the amount of points given up, I mean, 114 points. Someone tweeted out it's more points than the Warriors scored the night before. So, just kind of alarming in that respect. But, I mean, there's a lot of basketball to be played. And you touched on it before, just in your question, is this is a young team. It's not a team where there's a Kyle Collinsworth who was a very good defender that can kind of lead in that regard. Very much a learning lesson for these guys. And maybe a month or two from now, we'll look back at that UVU game and think, yeah, that needed to happen. That needed to happen to this team, because you have a bunch of guys that aren't all that familiar. You're playing with one another outside of the Lone Peak players that we've talked so much about. And these Lone Peak players, they're not used to adversity. They're not a bunch of guys that just had to endure that. So I think having kind of that slap in the face can ultimately prove very beneficial to this team. And it was quite a slap in the face. And it wasn't like UVU was just hucking it up and getting lucky. They were well spaced, good looks by and large that they were getting throughout the game. So yeah, you get props to UVU. I don't think enough credit's been given to that team, but yeah, you can't let that happen. But again, I think looking back, it could ultimately prove very beneficial for this team moving forward.
So one of the big things, obviously, you mentioned the 114 points, Brandon. I mean, defense has not been a hallmark of these last few years at BYU. Obviously, part of that is the numbers are a little inflated because of the style of offense that they play and the possessions that are created for the opposition as well. But I mean, obviously, this year there's some big concerns on the perimeter and also in the paint. If Mika's out of the game, is this are these defensive issues fixable, or do you just think that the offense has to be good enough to just outscore what the defense can't do?
Probably a little bit of both, and probably more of the latter. Just considering the type of system Dave Rose runs, and I just don't see a defensive stopper in that lineup outside of Eric Mika. A Dasher maybe could prove to be that guy, but I don't think you're going to see it this year. I think he's probably a year away of just providing what you thought he would when he was being recruited. So yeah, I think it's going to be a problem. Corbin Kafusi, when he comes back, I think he could solve that to a large degree, expecting him to be at least as good as he was last year. So yeah, we'll wait for that. But also, I don't know if he's going to be able to return to be the guy we're expecting, considering that he had a full football season that he has to get away from. And also with BYU playing the bowl game, it's going to be an accelerated transition, more so than it was prior. And so that gives you pause in just inserting a guy and, okay, yeah, that's our guy. It's going to be interesting. But yeah, there's no one close to Eric Mika as far as production and what he can lend on both sides of the floor. So yeah, that's going to be an issue throughout the entire year. And you just hope Eric Mika can just learn to avoid foul trouble like he hasn't been able to do recently.
Yeah. Well, let's shift to football. Obviously, the big story coming out of the Utah State game was Taysom Hill's injury, another freakish injury against Utah State. But let's step away from the injury, Brandon. I just kind of wanted to ask you about where do you think what is Taysom Hill's legacy? Do you think as a BYU quarterback? Obviously, the injuries will play a part of it, but what about the time he spent, you know, two full seasons for the most part and a couple of other partial seasons as BYU's quarterback?
I think you're going to look back at his career and be frustrated, to be honest with you. When he was on the field doing what he does, he was providing extraordinary play, the type that we'll probably never, ever see again at BYU. I think he was that extraordinary athletically. What he was able to do just as far as just his athletic makeup was remarkable. And it's an absolute tragedy that he was never able to really complete a full season doing what he does, fully healthy. And you just think about what you missed by him going down with injury time and time again. And when he was running the zone read, which is tailor-made for a guy of his skill set. And I don't know how you can't be frustrated. And it's no fault of his own, obviously. It's not his fault he's getting injured, but my goodness, I just don't think we're going to see anything close to that level of athleticism again at the quarterback position at BYU and maybe anywhere. You just look back at the moments he had, and it's absolutely phenomenal what he was able to do on the football field. And unfortunately, this year he was never able to really thrive in the pro style offense that Ty Detmer's been running. I don't think he's as bad as a lot of fans are putting forth or choose to believe. But yeah, it's kind of a sour note, and it's just the cruelest thing ever that his final game of his season, that his last game ever to be played at BYU, he goes out with injury and his career is done. It's just absolute cruelty. Just what's befallen him. So yeah, in my mind, you just look back at him and just think what could have been. You hate to do that, but I think with Taysom Hill, considering what he was able to do when he was healthy, I don't know how you can't fall into that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that'll be a question that is asked for a long time. So now the keys are officially being handed over to Tanner Mangum. Obviously, they'll have several weeks to prepare for the Poinsettia Bowl. Do you think the offense will be very different with Tanner in place, or do you think Ty Detmer's offense is what it is and Tanner will just come in and run what's there, minus some of the read option stuff that was put in most recently?
Yeah, it's largely going to be the same. Ty Detmer's shown that he's very loyal to his system, and he's going to allow for growing pains to get that system going. I think it's the correct system that BYU needs to be running. They're not going to get a Taysom Hill talent again, at least not in the near future. And right. And just with the athletes BYU typically gets, I think it's absolutely the right system you run. And I think Tanner Mangum, you hear the insides, the rumors that he's not getting the offense. But you look at what he's actually done in games, I think he's looked pretty comfortable. And this one touchdown pass last game against Utah State, you saw him escape the pocket, keep his eyes downfield, go through at least two progressions, and just throw an accurate pass toward the end zone. Now, he didn't look uncomfortable to me, and he hasn't really looked uncomfortable while he's been in there. I think it's going to fit him very well. I think he's a bright kid, and I expect big things from him. I really do. I think he's going to be a success in this system, probably more so than Taysom Hill, because he has a lot more strengths to run that system more effectively than Taysom Hill does, namely with touch passing, which Taysom Hill never really got a feel for. When watching Taysom Hill throw underneath patterns, it was a lot like watching John Beck his freshman year, just not a really good feel or symmetry with how the ball needs to be thrown, where it does. And I think that's going to be the big leap forward you see potentially with Tanner Mangum. Obviously, he has to do it, But I think you're going to see it next year, and you might even see it in this bowl game. I think there's a very good chance you will. So yeah, I think Tanner Mangum's going to be a success in this system, and I expect him to put up big numbers in the bowl game.
So let's shift to another player. Obviously, another outgoing senior is Jamal Williamson, and also had, you know, his career interrupted a little bit with injuries and some other things. What do you feel like his? I think his story is probably a little different than, and his legacy is probably a little different than Taysom's.
Yeah, the frustrating thing to me, and I've kind of been outspoken about this, is I really feel the prior staff neglected the offensive line. And you look at the situation the offensive line is in right now with the injuries and all that, and there's really not a lot of depth to speak of. I would like to see what Jamal Williams could do behind that 2006 offensive line. Or prior offensive lines. And I think it would be amazing to watch. He's at least a top three running back, and you could well argue he's the best running back BYU's ever had. His ability to just make that one cut and go, not waste any movement, and just pure instinct and just move up field is unlike, it's a lot like Curtis Brown, but it's better than what Curtis Brown showed, because Jamal Williams is a more physical running back. And yeah, he's going to be very, very, very tough to replace. I think BYU's offensive line is going to be better. So that's going to allow lesser talents to maybe show better than they would be otherwise with what Jamal Williams had to work behind. But yeah, just an extraordinary story. A guy that brought a lot of life. Well, like, what you appreciate as a reporter is just someone that's different. Right. He had a lot of the sameness with BYU. And they're great kids. I don't want to disparage that at all, but it's just nice to have a guy that's just not the mold of what a typical BYU player is. And he's just been a breath of fresh air since the second he arrived on campus, and his play has just matched everything. He's exceeded everyone's expectations. I think you can safely say that. So yeah, I'm going to miss him a lot just by his growth, his play and everything else. And he's going to be very hard to replace.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously Squally Canada is the heir apparent there, and has had a decent year, and I think has shown some flashes. One of the things that was an issue this year was depth at running back. What does the depth look like for next year? Obviously, KJ Hall's had an impressive late season showing, but I mean, is it Squally getting 20 touches a game next year? Is he going to be the featured back, or do you think it's going to be more where BYU has been historically with several guys getting rotated in there?
I still like Riley Byrd a lot. I think Riley Byrd, there's a reason they redshirted him this year. I think he's going to have a say in the rotation. I think he's a guy that could potentially steal 10 reps a game from Squally, assuming Squally's going to be the starter or maybe even beat him out. I really like Riley Byrd. I like his size and speed combo, and I think he can be a very good running back moving forward. But I like Squally. Squally's shown well when he's been called upon. Obviously, he doesn't have the complete makeup Jamal Williams has, but he's young. So I think the running back position is going to be fine. And with what KJ Hall's shown, and also you have Trey Dye waiting in the wings. I think Trey Dye is a guy that could potentially do some good things moving forward. So I think there's a good variety. There's good depth. And running back's really not a position you worry about moving forward, despite losing the great talent that is Jamal Williams.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll get you out on one last question. This is from Twitter, from listener Corey Nelson at BlueManCrew14. He asked, next year's football roster, who's coming back from missions, people in the pipeline, recruits, etc. So who do you think next year, and you can obviously pick guys that are coming back on missions, who's one or two guys that you think will be the most impactful on the 2017 season who aren't on the roster today or maybe are redshirting like a Riley Byrd?
A guy I look to is Kiefer Longson. I think offensive line is the position that really needs to get going at a higher. I think Epi did an extraordinary job given what he had to deal with and what he had a current as a current for a pool of players, but Kiefer Longson was the big name offensive line recruit that I think BYU should be getting year in and year out. Came home from his mission due to health concerns, redshirted this year partly because of health concerns. And I think he can be a real stud on that offensive line, and I think returning Louis Lapuaho is going to be really big, assuming that he can get back up to speed, which isn't a given. But as far as just missionaries coming in, I'm sorry, I'd have to look at the list. I'm not as familiar as I should be with who's coming off missions this next year. I'm glad you're throwing this question out. It doesn't do much for your podcast, but I'm interested in that. I'll probably go to that right after we hang up. The offensive line's my big thing. I think BYU needs to be a program like Stanford that's just offensive line based. You go to BYU to become an NFL ready offensive lineman, and that just hasn't been the case for a lot of years, and I think that needs to change, and I think it will change because I think that should be the strength of the program, and I think it's an easy strength relatively to develop, so I'd like to see that, and we'll see which offensive linemen are coming off missions, and Kiefer Longson, I think he's a guy that you look at.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Brandon, for coming on the podcast. We appreciate it. And we'll, as always, encourage folks to go check out the Deseret News sports coverage of BYU hoops and football. So thanks for coming on, and we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Adam.
CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, did you know that there's fantasy leagues for movies?
No, there's not.
Yes.
Are you
yes.
serious? This is a thing?
This is a legitimate, actual thing. I love when I surprise you on the openings. But some of
this
my
is
favorite
a
openings.
Thing that makes me kind of sad. Well, and based on the conversation we were just having before we started recording, this is way out of left field.
Yes, but, yes it is. Yes, it is. FantasyMovieLeague.com. You pick 8 movies a week and compete against friends and family to see which set of 8 movies makes the most money that weekend.
Let's be honest. You're competing against family because if you're doing this, you don't have any friends.
Oh, stop it. Just because you would be terrible at this doesn't mean it's not fun.
Wait a minute. I'm guessing which movie's going to make the most money?
Correct. 8 movies, though. You have to pick 8 movies.
You don't have to know very much to get that correct.
Oh, look at you. Look at you, Mr. Smarty Pants. No, okay. 5 seconds into the idea, and you already know how it works, huh?
Let me say this.
It's clever.
Maybe
it's
I need clever. To rephrase this. Maybe I need to rephrase this.
Don't worry. Whatever your rephrasing you is, I'm going to take it out. So
I think you could be competitive at this without knowing as much about movies as you do.
Okay.
I think I could still compete.
So I'm going to actually agree with you based on a couple of facts. Some of the best fantasy players I know in baseball and football don't watch any of the sport and don't know any of its intricacies. They just figure out the numbers.
Yep.
My wife is one of those players. She's done very well in our fantasy football league, family fantasy football league, and she just goes by the numbers. She couldn't tell you what teams are good or not, but she looks at and analyzes, and sometimes that actually helps.
No, that's the advantage somebody has who doesn't really follow the sport or have feelings about it.
Yes.
Because that's really feelings. What gets people is they let their feelings get involved. It's those pesky feelings. They mess up everything.
Feelings do mess up lots of things, Matt. We got a lot of feelings to talk about tonight. We'll talk about the crushing loss to Utah Valley, the emotional
feelings.
Win for football against Utah State, and we will, I'm sure talk about a few other things along the way. But Matt, let's start off with the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
So, Matt, women's volleyball is the 13th seed. They seed weird in women's volleyball. Have you looked at the bracket?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, there's only like...
Do they draw it out of a hat?
It's strange in a lot of other sports. They have, I think, what is it, 15 seeds? 20 seeds? I can't remember. I don't have the bracket up in front of me. And then everybody else is unseeded. So, it's weird. But anyway... Matt, they play UNLV. I'm getting ahead of myself. That's women's basketball plays UNLV this weekend. They host Princeton on Friday. in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Matt, Princeton's 19-4, but not particularly good, I think, compared to BYU, so they should win that easily.
What did Princeton ever do to us? Why are we picking on Princeton so much this year?
I don't know. Do you dislike Princeton?
No, I'm just saying Princeton. We keep beating all their teams and stuff.
Yeah, we do. Well, it's not that hard, really. Yikes. It's not that hard. Did I say that?
We should play them in football. That'd be fun.
Well, it really, you know, earlier in football, oy vey. That would be pretty amazing, wouldn't it?
That could be fun.
So we are in we're in the same bracket with Texas, who's a very good team, so we could meet them in a round of eight, right? Round of eight, the third round.
Elite Eight, as it were.
The Elite Eight, as it were. So we will play, that's why I had it in my head, we will play UNLV or Utah in the second round, which would happen on December 3rd. And I don't remember where that one's at, actually, off the top of my head. But anyway, so that's what they've got. Utah was 20-11 this year. UNLV was 23-7. So we'll see how that goes and be back on next week talking about it. Women's basketball, Matt, they won the University of New Mexico Thanksgiving Classic. Is it really a classic? Maybe it is. I don't know.
I think it is. I think it's great.
They had wins over St. Joe's and Tulsa. Next up, they're in Maui. Nothing against Albuquerque, but that is an upgrade. The Maui Classic against UNLV and Oregon State this weekend. I really feel bad for them that they have to go to Maui.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. It's a long flight. It's tough. Really wears you out.
That's tough. Yeah, that's really tough. I'm sure they'll. I'm sure that, you know, they're just doing this, taking one for the team, as it were. So Matt,
well, the change in weather is going to mess them up. I mean,
yeah. Well, Utah's getting pounded with snow right now. From what
I saw, it's crazy. From what I can see on social media,
yes, and it was 50 degrees yesterday here in Minnesota.
So, where I am, it's in the 70s today. High 70s, actually.
Yeah, well, nobody cares about your weather. They only care about my weather because I'm in Minnesota. So, Matt, let's talk about Cougars in the pros. With the first pick, the NFL draft.
Ooh, sit down, Goodell.
So we bagged on Goodell. Was that last week or 2 weeks ago?
Probably both. Podcast,
pretty much. But here's the thing, Matt. The NFL is an absolute mess, and it just continues to be a mess.
Yeah. They just can't get it right.
They can't get it right. He thinks the reason that did you see this? What Goodell said was the reason for the decline in ratings.
Oh, I think I did, but I forgot because it didn't seem intelligent to me. So I moved on. Why don't you let's bring it back up?
So he was responding specifically to a question that I think people had been saying, that it was the long commercial breaks, which is also incredibly weird since their commercial breaks have not changed in like 15 years.
I think what's really starting to bother people is the commercial break.
After the kickoff.
Commercial break.
Yeah, yeah. It's annoying. They should get rid of it for sure. But Goodell, you know, he is basically blaming all of the off the field stuff that he's trying to bring down his foot on. I just, like, no responsibility for him, right? It's all the players' fault. Yeah, sure. Sure, Roger. Sure. You haven't been the one making a fool of the NFL. But anyway. All right, Matt. Ziggy Ansah's injured again, did not play against the Vikings. He has no sacks in 2016. Too early to call it a lost season for Ziggy Ansah?
Probably too early to officially call it, but that seems to be, you know, the direction we're headed in. It's just tough.
Yeah,
it's when you get hurt in a nagging way and you can't get over the hump on it.
Nope. Kyle Vannoy played his second game with the New England Patriots, had two tackles versus the Jets. G-A-J-E-T-S, Jets. Always good to beat the Jets, Matt. Ravens, Pitta had another, you know, he's this kind of has been his pattern, three catches, 34 yards, Nothing big against the Bengals. And then Daniel Sorensen for the Chiefs had two tackles against the Broncos. Continues to play a significant role for that Kansas City team. Any thoughts on Cougars in the pros, Matt?
Nope. The only thing I will add, I guess, is at what point do I get to buy a Van Noy jersey?
Whenever you
do
want.
Do I need to wait to do that? Is it too early to do it now?
No, it's not too early. Do it now. My gosh, I saw a bunch of – I was watching the Monday night football game last night. Do you know how many Philadelphia people have Wentz jerseys? They bought him before he played a game.
Yeah, but he's the starting quarterback.
Yeah, but do you really want to be that guy with the Bengals fan with the Akili Smith jersey?
Do you really want to be a Bengals fan, period?
Okay, fair enough.
Or an Eagles fan?
San Diego.
If you're an Eagles fan, let's say you're an Eagles fan. What jersey do you suggest they purchase?
Oh, I don't know. You could do a classic one. If you've got nobody you like on the current team, pick a classic one. I saw some Reggie Whites. I saw some Randall Cunninghams. I saw some Ron Jaworskis. You just go classic, man. If there's nobody on the team that you currently like, but I will
say.
Yeah,
but maybe you like the current uniform. I don't know. I'm just saying you got to buy somebody.
No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. Do you have one? It's Tom Brady, right?
Yeah, I've got the Tom Brady jersey.
Yeah, when he retires, are you gonna buy a Garoppolo?
No, but if I wanted a current jersey and the Patriots were to change their jersey 10, 15 years from now?
Okay, fair enough. All right. You have a point. So, Matt, I did the halftime show for the Utah State game, and I was not happy with the performance of the Cougars in the first half. But just like the UMass game, they came and absolutely obliterated the Aggies in the second half, mainly because Utah State's not very good.
No, they're not.
So, Matt, I have one key takeaway, then I'll give your chance to do a key takeaway, okay? My biggest takeaway was that Dallin Leavitt really had a chip on his shoulder and nobody cared.
Nobody cared, not even a little bit.
I mean, he makes that interception, gets up on the bench and, like, looks at the crowd. What is with that?
Yeah. Like, and everybody in the crowd was like, wait, who's that guy?
Who's that
guy? Why is that guy staring at all of us?
Why is he staring at the old people section? Anyway, that's not really a takeaway, but I just thought, you know, you can transfer, you can leave. That's cool. I harbor no feelings against people that transfer. Ill feelings, usually, right? Don't care. Your choice. You didn't like it there, you didn't think you'd get playing time, cool. Go someplace else.
Yeah, and in his case, probably a good decision because he wasn't gonna play.
No, he wasn't gonna play. He was gonna be a backup. And, you know, both of the safeties have been healthy this year, so he wouldn't have played very much. But instead, he played a lot on a bad team. Okay,
yep.
Cool for you. But don't be a dink about it, right? Like, make the interception, celebrate, and then just get back with your teammates. Anyway, they had several dinks on their team. Not as big as that Notre Dame guy, though. Do you see that?
Oh, my gosh. The kicking the guy in the head?
Kicking the guy in the head and then stepping on a guy's foot later?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway. Not as big of a...
What's going on at Notre Dame? I think Brian Kelly's got to go.
Oh, he's not going anywhere. They got to stick with the coach. They were good last year.
The team's a mess. The program's a mess.
They're a mess now, for sure. But we just got to... That game we saw several years ago is now a victory for BYU.
Yeah, I know. We saw BYU beat Notre Dame in South Bend. Now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, did Riley Nelson complete that pass?
I guess. That's the way I'm going to remember it now.
Is that the way it happened? Anyway, So what was your key takeaway, Matt?
My key takeaway is if you've only won three games, you should not talk trash at any point during a game.
You know when you should definitely not talk trash when you've only won three games? When you're down 20 points in the fourth quarter.
You know, there was a part of me early in that game, I thought, well, you know, these Utah State players are way more fired up than and our team is for this game. You know, what why is that? Our guys look a little flat compared to the Utah State guys. It's because for the Utah State guys, they've had nothing to play for weeks. You know, people talk about independence and how once you're not in the national championship conversation, you have nothing to play for. And I don't buy that. I'm not on that train. Because if you can't, you know, if you can't play for a bowl game or whatever, you know, there's a lot of teams in conferences that get eliminated from the national championship conversation very quickly.
And from their conference.
Right. So early. Being independent, it doesn't do that to you. Okay.
Right.
That's not the problem. Like if you can't get up for games, like then you have a problem or your team has a problem. And I think, you know, if you look at like Utah State, they've had nothing to play for most of their season. And it was the last game. It was BYU. They know a lot of these guys. You got a guy like Levitt who feels like he got slighted or maybe overlooked by the BYU program. You probably have a handful of guys on that team that got recruited by or wanted to go to BYU or wanted to play at BYU and aren't there. You know, I'm not trying to do the big brother, little brother thing because there's a lot of them probably feel that way about Utah or other schools too, right? So anyway, my point is the emotion for those guys got way out of control. So sometimes there is something about a balance there that maybe I didn't totally, you know, understand early on in that game. And the other thing is our guys were just kind of like what are you guys all jumping around about? You're Utah State.
Yeah.
You've won three games.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to get into this part of the game with you because it's not worth my time. Like, I'm just going to worry about winning the football game. And I thought that our players, as the game progressed, I thought they did a pretty good job of staying in that mindset and just taking care of business instead of getting pulled down into that ridiculousness. Because I felt like their stuff even got worse as the gap.
Yes, widened. I agree. It got worse.
And I thought BYU did a pretty good job of just ignoring it and doing what they needed to do to win the football game.
So Matt, I think BYU started off a little flat.
They did.
I didn't know any of this going into the game, but when the announcers talked about Reno Mahe's daughter, and it's senior day and they do all that ceremonial stuff, I think it's with all of those factors that I think it's actually understandable that they start off a little flat. I didn't fully understand that going into the game, but it makes sense that they start off flat. But I am with you 100% in that I really like the way they handled not Lake's one little skirmish aside where he shouldn't have been. If he should have been flagged, so should the other guy. But that skirmish aside, they stayed out of it.
I disagree with that flag. I think the flag was thrown on the wrong person in that particular circumstance. But I would have been okay.
If they had thrown it both ways, I would have been fine with that too. I'm with you. I agree.
That. But I hate that. Offsetting personal fouls. Whatever.
I know you hate it.
But coming back to your point, and I think that because I think that is the point in terms of how this team came out. I mean, with some of the things that are going on around the program right now that are just frankly more important than what they were out there to do Saturday, especially when you think about what's going on with the Mahes. And I can barely talk about it without getting it's a difficult situation, right? And
yeah.
And I sure for these players who love their coach and love his family. I mean, that's got to be a tremendously difficult circumstance to try and come out and do something like play a football game.
Yep.
And so you can't really, you know, and you can't really hold that against them. And you got to say, you know, and hope that you know everybody's able to support each other the way that they need, and support the Mahes as they work through what they're going through.
But Matt, despite my halftime rants in both of those games, in the end, they did exactly what we thought they should do, both against UMass and Utah State. They won and won convincingly, just as they should have, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem with judging a game at halftime, is, well, it's just halftime. So, obviously the big headline out of the game, Matt, besides obviously the Mahe family and our thoughts and prayers go with with their family and their daughter is Taysom Hill. You know, he looked like a man possessed running the football again. In that second half, he clearly was had decided he, you know, they came out in the second half and they started doing the read option with him, and clearly they were going to win it with his legs and Jamal's legs, and then of course the unfortunate injury, and we now know he won't be back for the Poinsettia Bowl. So Matt Todd on Twitter at Todd and D on Twitter says, where does Taysom rank among QBs? What's his legacy? What does Taysom level excited mean going forward? So Matt, let's talk about that. Where does he fit on quarterbacks?
See, that's tough, and I know that in a minute we're gonna dig into numbers here, right? But because you can't help yourself,
I can't. I love numbers.
And that, and I know that we're gonna do it because you sent me a spreadsheet. So, and whenever you email me a spreadsheet, and then I know you mean business. So for me, and I don't want to jump to the conclusion here at the front of the conversation.
Sure, you can.
That when we put Taysom Hill on the scale of excitedness, I think Taysom Hill is a kind of excited, not a level of excited. Does that make sense? I mean, when you look at, you know, we've got 9 quarterbacks here listed in careers and some numbers here, and we'll start picking these apart because there's some things here that I see about where he kind of fits in numerically. But I think that Taysom is a different kind of a quarterback than almost everybody else on this list.
Yeah.
So going forward, if I say I'm Taysom Hill excited, I think that's going to mean something a little bit different instead of saying I'm excited at 9 on a scale of 10 or 8 on a scale of 10. I think a Taysom Hill excited, when I think about Taysom Hill's legacy and what he represents, I mean, you look at what this guy has gone through, what this guy has sacrificed for the program, the kind of exciting plays – and the way he led this team, the things that he did on the field that would just blow your mind. So that, to me, that's really the legacy. And maybe I feel that way because the way the numbers play out. But he sure has been a lot of fun to watch, and has given something to this program and has dedicated himself physically to this program in a way that I think a lot of us really don't quite understand.
So, Matt, let me ask you a pop quiz trivia question. Luke Staley has the best season as a running back in BYU history with 1,582 yards and averaged 8 yards a carry. Okay? Amazing, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah,
Absolutely amazing. Pete Van Valkenburg is next with 1,386 yards, and he averaged 6 yards a carry. Okay? Also, a heck of a season in 1972. Who's number 3 on that list?
Is it Taysom Hill?
Taysom Hill. 1,344 yards in 2013. He averaged 5.5 yards a carry. Okay? Now, if you take out his sacks, which you should, because I hate that the NCAA counts sacks as rushing, because that's insane. If you take out his sacks, he averaged near 7 yards a carry, or maybe it was a little over. Let me check my math. And was close to Luke Staley's record. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying is 100% true. The problem with evaluating Taysom Hill against the other quarterbacks is he didn't do the same things the other quarterbacks did. A lot of people will say, well, it's kind of like Steve Young. No, it's not. Steve Young never had a running season like Taysom Hill did in 2013. It's not a good comparison. It just isn't. There is no apples to apples with Taysom Hill. There just isn't.
Well, and even if you do it that way and you just stick to, you know, yards per carry, or, you know, total touchdowns. I know that one's tough because of seasons, right?
Yeah.
But you know, even if you look at yards per carry between Steve Young and Taysom Hill, I mean, it's almost a yard and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Taysom Hill is arguably the best runner BYU has ever had. The best runner. And he also happened to throw for nearly 7,000 yards as well. It's hard to do this. But we're going to do it anyway, Matt, because that's what we do. So here we're going to make it easy. McMahon and Detmer, we put Detmer at the top of that zero to Detmer scale, right? And then we have unanimously decided that McMahon is second. Actually, we haven't, because I think McMahon is first and Detmer second. But fine, those are the two, okay?
We argue about that all the time.
Yes, but those are the two. Okay, fine. Good, we got it. Two down. So, Matt, I'm going to go down my order, okay? And you tell me if Hill ranks above this quarterback or below this quarterback.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Are you ready?
Okay. Oh, man. All right, here we go.
So, McMahon and then Detmer, or Detmer and McMahon. Number three, I'm going to put Steve Sarkisian, Matt, above or below. He's below.
He's below Steve Sarkisian. Yeah, I know, but I like Taysom Hill.
Yeah, I like Taysom Hill
too. All right, so yeah, he's below Sarkisian.
Okay, I'll throw out another name for you. Robbie Bosco.
Now that one gets tougher, but I think he's also below Robbie Bosco.
All right, let's go more recent, Matt, and say Max Hall.
I have to put him below Max Hall. This isn't looking good.
Okay. John Beck.
I take Beck.
You'll take Beck over him. Okay. Mark Wilson.
Here I'm taking Hill.
Okay. What about somebody, say, like Gifford Nielsen, not on the list of stats you have? I assume you'd take Hill at that point, or
yeah, I'm taking Hill at that point.
And we're only counting Lavelle quarterbacks and forward, okay? To simplify this a little bit, Matt, I am going to major league disagree with you. I think he comes after Bosco. I think he's above Hall and above Beck and above Wilson.
So really, the only two quarterbacks you have him above that I didn't are Beck and Hall.
Correct. And I know you weren't like solid in your opinion, like this was some ironclad thing. You were just, you know, kind of going off the cuff here. But
I could put him between Beck and Hall.
Would you put Hall before Beck, or the other way around? That's the way I had it.
Yeah, I know. Once I said that, that's what you were gonna make me do. But I think I probably put Hall before Beck. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I do too.
So I think Hill, but I see them as very close, and I think Hill is right in that range. I think Taysom Hill is a Max Hall, John Beck type of quarterback.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, where we would put them on a scale.
So here's the reasons why I think he fits there. The rushing just makes it very hard to evaluate him against other QBs, but it's extremely valuable. We saw that this year. We are an awesome third down team because of Taysom Hill. Because on a third and five, he can throw it or he can run it, right? And the only other guy on this list who, by the way, I did not put in was Steve Young. We forgot Steve. He goes, did I forget Steve Young? He goes above Hall. No. Did we say Steve Young?
Oh, you didn't say – I don't think you said Steve
no,
Young.
No, I zipped past him. But Steve Young, we agree that he's above Hall. Or is he above Bosco? He's above Bosco.
I put Young above Bosco.
Above Bosco. So, okay. All right. So, I don't know how we forgot Steve Young. But, Matt, my point is this. It's very hard to judge him, but you have to. And I'm going to say it goes. My list is McMahon, Detmer, Sarkisian, Young, Bosco, and Hill at number six. I think he's the sixth best quarterback all time. I think he goes above Beck and Hall and Wilson and whoever else you want to throw out there. I don't think he ever had the offensive lines that a lot of these other teams did. A lot of these other quarterbacks did. I don't know, besides Jamal Williams, that he played with other elite skill position guys. Mitch Matthews was obviously quite good, and there are a few other good guys along the way. But you look at those teams that Sarkisian was on, and that Young was on and that McMahon was on. There were multiple other players on that offense that went into the NFL. So with all that together, I think he's like number six. You have him at number seven. That's still pretty high, right? With as good of QBs as BYU has had.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, top 10.
That's not a bad career. That's a really good career. No, not at all. You know, nearly 3,000 yards rushing, nearly 7,000 yards passing. I mean
he's still – I mean, I think you can say that Taysom Hill is one of the best quarterbacks BYU's ever had. And there's been a lot of quarterbacks who've come through. A lot of people have played. A lot of people have started.
Yeah.
You know, you look back at you. We've had some really highly touted people come through. Yep. We've had people come in. You know, we've had a couple guys start games as freshmen. We've had a lot of people come through here, a lot of quarterbacks. And, you know, people play part of a season or just a season or whatever it is. So to say you're one of the best quarterbacks of all time to go through a program, that is nothing to sneeze at for sure.
No. And do you agree with me that Hill is arguably the best runner we've ever had? Do you think he belongs in that conversation with Jamal Williams and Luke Staley and Harvey Unga is maybe the Mount Rushmore of rushers at BYU history?
I feel like he belongs in the conversation. I don't know that I would put him on my Mount Rushmore.
That's better.
That's nice. Better, isn't it?
Yeah, that's nice.
Rushmore, Mount Rushmore, Mount Rush less. Some people wish Taysom would have been on Mount Rush less, right? But I don't know that I put him on the Mount Rushmore of runners at BYU.
It's Luke Staley and then it's Taysom Hill. Those are the two best. I'm telling you right now, those are the two best. You talked about Taysom Hill and the wow factor. I mean, that game against Texas, I know their defensive scheme was terrible. I get some of that. But he also broke a ton of tackles.
I mean, he was like hurdling people. There's that whole video up over, around, through.
Yes.
I mean, it's one of the greatest performances of a quarterback ever, right? I mean, it was a really good game.
Yes,
fantastic. Texas played a lot of teams that year whose quarterbacks or running backs didn't do that.
Yes, yeah, correct. Not everybody rushed for 200-plus yards against them.
Right.
So anyway.
I think he belongs in the conversation, but I'm not ready to cede ground to running Taysom Hill from, you know, when you start talking about guys like
Harvey Unga
and
Jamal Williams.
You know, Jamal Williams. And,
okay, fair enough.
And I know you're not putting him over Luke Staley, and I get that. And no conversation for me of players of, you know, all time, anything would be complete without a reference to the 1996 team.
You're killing me.
And the greatest running back that never was at BYU, which is Ronnie Jenkins.
But let's play the what if game here for Matt, because that's one of the for a second here, Matt. This is one of the big things with Taysom's career is the injuries. Is it possible that he would have been a top three if he had stayed healthy?
I mean, if Taysom Hill plays four healthy seasons,
yeah, isn't he top three?
I think he wins a Heisman Trophy.
Just crazy to me. That's, you know, Brandon Gurney was on the podcast earlier, and I think I disagree with Brandon a little bit on his take, but a lot of it was true in that, you know, we will all look back and go, wow, what could have been if he had stayed healthy? And that's
Not
his fault. You know, I know people will say, well, this proves that he's injury prone, and maybe he is. But
what does that even mean? What does that even mean? I mean, did the elbow?
What is his elbow?
He landed funny on his arm. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
injury prone, like you have said, is a thing if the guy keeps messing up the same knee.
Yes.
Right? Or the same
leg. You know, arm. It's a knee and then an arm, hamstring. You know, it's a bunch of things related to the same injury. None of these injuries had anything to do with one another. They're all crazy, and they all came against Utah State. Well, no, one against Nebraska, but, you know, two of them against Utah State.
I blame Utah State for the Nebraska
game.
But you know what is funny, as long as we're talking about the Nebraska game, is a few weeks ago we had somebody talking about how Taysom Hill came back in the fourth quarter, some broadcaster during a game. Do you remember this? One of the announcers during a game a couple weeks ago told the story of Taysom Hill coming back into that game and winning it.
Yes.
And then
Which, of course, he didn't.
Which didn't happen. But I think it was this Utah State game that one of the announcers talked about Juergens catching the Tanner Mangum Hail Mary against Nebraska and then doing it again against Boise State.
Yes, didn't he? Isn't that how it happened?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what the announcer said. It's like, do these guys, they're just making it up. Like, yeah. They just show up to work, and they're like, okay, get on a plane, you're going to Provo. They're called the Cougars. That's all you need to know.
Listen, it was clear this week that Hawkins and the other announcer, and I like Hawkins. He had some good things to say. I really liked him calling them classless. I thought that was well-deserved. But it is clear, watching a lot of these games, the guys that have watch tape and those that have not.
Right.
And quite frankly, I find it absolutely, especially if this is their full-time job. I realize some of these regional or smaller guys that we occasionally get, they have a full-time job and then they're a play-by-play person as well on the weekends. So for them, I feel a little different. But for somebody like Hawkins or any of these others that are full-time announcers, either color or play-by-play, if you didn't watch any tape, what the freak are you doing with your time?
Well, but the other thing I'll say is this, and I'm not going to give those guys a pass that do this as a side gig,
okay?
Because it's still your job.
Yes, and you are getting paid to do it.
And if you don't know, just don't say it.
Just keep your
shut. It's not hard to sit there and not make stuff up. You know what I mean? Like,
it's true. Well, it's not hard.
You've got like a clinical problem. But I think that for these guys, even these guys who are doing this just on the weekend or, you know, they're a local sports broad anchor or whatever they are, you have a little bit of pride in what you're doing and put together enough material to fill time during the game without having to make stuff up or rely on things that you think you remember.
Yes.
You know,
you're right. In interest of time, though, I'm going to move us on to the bowl game here real fast, though.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear your take on this.
We haven't even gotten to basketball yet, and we're 35 minutes in. So, okay, Johnny Ashton on Facebook asked this, Matt, about the bowl game. Rank likely bowl opponents in order of preference. Matt, so here are the candidates. You ready? San Diego State loses the Mountain West Conference championship game, they are a candidate, so we'll keep them in there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they lose, they will be the opponent, because I think that's the best thing for the bowl, for the Poinsettia Bowl, us versus San Diego State. Other candidates include Boise State, Wyoming if they lose, and New Mexico and Air Force. So those are your five that could potentially be in the bowl, okay? Those are your five candidates. Matt, in order of preference, your five, five, who would you most like? Who would you most want to play?
Boise State.
Okay. Who would you least like to play out of those five?
UNM.
New Mexico. Okay.
Yeah.
Here it is for me. I want to play San Diego State.
Oh, I know you do. I want to
pound them into the ground.
You want to play them because if we play them, that means they lost the WAC championship game.
Yes.
And then we're going to beat them. They're going to end their season with two consecutive losses.
Yes.
That's what you want to see.
I want them to be 9-5 and basically have not really had that great of a season. Oh, be great. I don't want to play Boise because we already played them. But as I say that, would I rather play Boise than Wyoming or New Mexico? Probably. Because what's the upside of playing Wyoming or New Mexico? None.
Anytime Wyoming it comes into the picture, there is no upside. No one wins.
There's no upside for sure. Absolutely not. Matt, Gary Payne on Twitter asks, at FastBreakGP on Twitter, what is the correct pronunciation of the word poinsettia? Poinsettia. What is the correct pronunciation? And by the way, he hashtagged it the pain bag.
The pain bag. Getting ahead of himself there.
Yeah, he's creating his own hashtags. He's new to Twitter, and he already owns it like a boss.
I forgot.
What's the correct pronunciation of the word poinsettia?
Oh, which is just as ridiculous as the things you were saying just a second ago. So I always thought it was poinsettia for a long time. And then it was a couple years ago talking about this bowl game that it was pointed out to me that you should say poinsettia, but I'm still not buying it.
So
Did you know it's poisonous?
Yeah, if you eat it.
Yeah, well.
There's people that die every year at Christmas. I read that on Facebook.
Are you serious? People actually eat it?
No. No, it is not.
And you know, the first time I...
Both pronunciations are correct.
So the first time I saw that dessert gag where they make it, it's like an ice cream dessert, and then you put the crumpled up, the ground up Oreos on top so it looks like dirt, and you can stick a flower in it,
yes,
and it looks
yes.
like you're eating out of the flower pot.
Yes,
the
yes,
first
yes.
time I saw that was, I don't remember how old I was, but we were at a family friend's... Christmas Eve party that we used to go to for years. I don't know if you remember this. It might have been after you were out of the house, but for several years we went to this family's Christmas Eve party, and we're sitting there, and the guy that's a family friend of theirs that I don't know real well reaches over to the centerpiece and starts eating dirt out of the centerpiece. I'm like, what in the world? What is this? What is wrong with this guy? And he's smiling. He's like, this is delicious. And I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? Anyway, the only reason I'm bringing it up is it was ice cream and ground up Oreos, but it was a poinsettia, not a poinsettia, but a poinsettia.
A poinsettia.
That was sitting in the flower. Had he actually ate the flower, the joke would not have been nearly as funny.
Okay, so Matt, we have to discuss the college football playoff, and our brother Don asks, I agree with Haskins. Isn't it Hawkins, the announcer?
I don't know. Hawkins, Haskins, same. Juergens,
Dan
Matthews,
Hawkins,
what's the
right?
difference?
It's Hawkins, not Haskins. That you should only be in the college football playoffs if you win your conference. Tell me I'm wrong. You're wrong. How's
you're wrong.
That?
Yeah, I'll say
that's
it too.
That's easy.
Yeah, you're wrong, Don.
That would be true. Hard. That every champion should go in if there was more than four spots, and
well,
if
I think
everybody
two different
played
things,
the same teams.
There's two different things being said here. He's not saying that the college football playoff should consist of conference champions. He's saying that you should not get in if you didn't win your conference. So there is a difference there.
Yes.
So, right? So
yes,
he's saying that Michigan and Ohio State play each other. Yeah, well, I mean, that's not the right example, because they played each other in the regular season, right? No. Yeah, that is the example. Sure. One of them's going to win the conference. One of them's going to win a national. One of them's going to win a conference championship game.
Yes.
The other one may still be one of the top four teams in the country.
If Alabama loses to Florida, they're still in.
Yes,
right?
And guess who's not? Florida.
Yes, Florida's not getting in. They're 15th. They have
right,
three losses.
So I don't think Don is saying that Florida should get in. I think Don is saying that if Alabama loses, they should definitely be out.
That's dumb. It's not though. That only works if you have set schedules and divisions, right? Where everybody plays each other. There's 130 teams. Unless you're going to have like a 16-team playoff, then it's going to
playoff.
Playoff. Listen, the committee's got it right. Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Washington are the four teams today. That will change on Saturday, right?
Yep.
I don't know how you don't put Ohio State in the playoff. I get
you
that
can't
they don't play that extra game. I get it. But why should Penn State be rewarded? Now I get head to head, Adam. Okay, and they may flip flop. Ohio State may flip flop out if Penn State goes in and destroys Wisconsin. Okay, but you know, should then the argument is, well, should Penn State go over Michigan?
Here we go,
because they got absolutely trashed by Michigan, and they lost to Pitt. You know, so I think they've got it right. I think those are the four teams. Now, if Wisconsin goes in and trashes Penn State and Washington loses, now obviously Clemson and Washington losing throws this into total chaos, right?
Well, but here's the problem, and here's the problem with saying you can't get in unless you're your conference champion. If Clemson or Washington doesn't get don't if they lose, who do you take?
Well, you're not putting in Virginia Tech, right?
No, you're not taking the winner of either of those conference champions.
You might take Colorado. You could make an argument for Colorado.
You're going to take Colorado before you take Michigan and Wisconsin?
Well, Wisconsin would have won their championship.
Okay, I guess that's okay.
But no, I would not take. I would not take. Wait a second. Is it USC or Colorado in the game? It's Colorado. I would not take Colorado over Michigan. No, I would not. I would not. But I could see the argument for that, though. I think Michigan played a tougher schedule and all those things. You know the easy way out on this. 18 playoff, the five power conferences, their champion gets an automatic bid. And then you have three at large.
18 playoff is the answer. I mean, but if you look and if you go back over and you can probably cherry pick this and find a couple seasons where this isn't true. But most of the time, if you go back over the past 10, 15 years, nobody is out there lobbying that the number 9 team should have had a chance at the national championship.
Right,
or that
right,
the number right. 10 team should have had a chance at the national championship. Right, and I it's not. I don't want this to turn into something like the NCAA tournament, where getting selected is the honor. So you're like, well, we had 64 teams. Now we're going to do this play-in game, so we can have 68. Because listen, the incremental 4 teams there, none of those guys are ever going to win the tournament.
Right.
And so I think that if you go with an 8-team playoff, you have in that group of 8, you've got some. You have the best team in the country. Let them play it out and find out who it is.
Yes.
You don't need to go. You know, you don't need to go up another level.
No. Donna's going to hate that answer, by the way. You know that.
Right, but then I hear people throw, well, what about 10 teams? Well, how do you do 10 teams?
No, 10 teams doesn't somebody work.
No, that doesn't work at all. So it was, okay, so what's if you don't do 8, what do you got to do, 16?
You're not going to do 16, cuz you look at 16 and you go West Virginia? You want West Virginia in there? No. You don't want West Virginia in there. But I think if you're going to have these Power 5 conferences, that all 5 conferences should have a representative in the playoff. And then you have 3 at large. Well, Matt, let's move on to basketball here because we're going to be way over time on this one. But maybe that's okay. There's a lot to talk about. Matt, I have never been more angry at the BYU basketball team than I was on Saturday. Never. Never. I've never been that angry. I mean, it was a pathetic loss. Absolutely pathetic. Is there any much more to say about it? I mean,
how are we supposed to even talk about this?
So, you know, Johnny,
I mean, we thought this was a team. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Johnny Ashton asks, where does this rank on our all-time basketball losses? I don't know about that, because that's a hard conversation to have without a ton of research. But I did look over the past few years, Matt, and this is not the worst loss Dave Rose has ever had. The worst loss he had was Pacific last year in the Marriott Center. They were a worse team than this UVU team. So, you know, there have been, but I think maybe the 4 worst losses Dave Rose has ever had, and I'm judging this by teams he should have clearly beat, I think the 4 worst losses are in the last, like, 3 seasons. So
which is crazy.
So, Kim.
So is that why everybody's so fired up about him right now?
I think people are just fired up because we lost to Utah Valley. I mean, they were a junior college team when I was in school. You know what I mean? Like, this is at the Marriott Center. And you didn't just lose because of something freaky. Those 18 three-pointers that they hit, 14 or 15 of them, those dudes were wide freaking open.
Well, why aren't you switching up the defense at some point in there?
So Kimberly Potts Frazier asks, so your thoughts on BYU playing zone defense when UVU is shooting the lights out? I have no idea, Kim. I've got none. I have no explanation.
Yeah, I'll tell you what my thoughts are. I don't understand it. That's what I think about it.
Did you see, Matt, Gary Payne asked us, did you see the Emory's post-game interview? I did.
No, I could not.
He was angry. Matt, this team went from being, I was so excited to them, to basically they're going to finish third in the West Coast Conference and be borderline, depending on what they do the rest of the season, whether they get into the tournament. That's where this team is now. They're right now, as of this moment, Eric Mika, according to sportsreference.com, is twice as valuable as any other player on the team. Emery has been, quite frankly, terrible. You know, LJ Rose started off well. These last two games, he's been abysmal. You know, and TJ Haas hasn't played well either since that opening night. You know, 30, you know, he gets all those points and stuff, and we're all of a sudden, Matt, besides Mika, Mika's playing fantastic. Absolutely great. But of the other regulars, nobody else is playing that great. Do you disagree with any of that?
No, you can't disagree with it.
Matt, this team is terrible at defense. Absolutely terrible. There's nobody that can guard on the perimeter, and there's only one guy in the middle that can guard, and his name is Mika. That's it. That's it defensively. I thought LJ Rose would be an upgrade, but now that they've played some teams with some perimeter speed and talent, I mean, this is two losses in a row to two teams that on paper you should beat in Valparaiso and Utah Valley. No one's talking about the Valparaiso loss. We should have won that game too.
Yeah, but I could have gotten over that one in isolation. I can deal with the Valparaiso loss.
Yeah.
This is especially, and give up all those points. I mean, are you serious?
So on Twitter, Spencer Linneman, on Facebook, Brian Taylor, they're basically asking us, is Dave Rose's seat hot? The answer is no.
No, Dave Rose is not anywhere near getting fired.
What I will say is this, and a couple people said it on our Facebook page as well. 2 years from now, that may not be true. This is a young team with a lot of talent. But next year and the year after that, if they're not winning, if they're losing to teams like Utah Valley, I'll be right up there with the Fire Dave Rose crew, honestly. Because these should be next year and the year after banner years for BYU. But let's not forget, and this came out, I think Andre Hutchins brought it out on the Facebook pages, we were probably a Final Four team if Davies doesn't leave that team in, what's that, 2011, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Rose is the best coach in BYU basketball modern history since the 50s.
And don't forget what he saved us from.
Well, Cleveland came in and took us up a notch, right? But kind of went back down. And Rose brought us to a level that we, quite frankly, had only hit twice in BYU basketball history. The early 80s and the those 50s, 60s teams, right? And some in the 70s. I guess I'm shortchanging the 70s. But, you know, it had been a long time since BYU had been relevant.
Well, and the other thing to keep in mind, and this was kind of referenced in either the Twitter conversation or on the Facebook page, I don't remember, is, you know, he's not just developing players right now. He's also developing coaches.
Yes.
He's got some newer, younger guys in there. He's gotten picked at a little bit. You know, some of his good assistants have moved on, and he's trying to replace those with somebody else, and that takes time. It isn't just a plug-and-play situation, especially with you look at the couple of guys that have left, you know, and most notably one of them who coached a team that beat us last Saturday. Weekend. And so I think that that's another component to this is you've got to, on some level, you have to be patient with the fact that he's also developing coaches.
So Matt, with that in mind, does he need some type of defensive specialist coach at this point? I mean, I kind of feel like maybe he needs to bring in somebody with experience who's just awesome at getting perimeter defense to be solid. Because I got to imagine these athletes that we have can do it. I mean, Nick Emery's brother Jackson was one of the best defenders, perimeter defenders BYU has ever had. But yet Nick is not in that category.
So it's not genetic.
It could, right? But he's a better athlete than his brother was. He's faster, I believe. Just watch him on the court.
So that's not what makes you a good defender then. So well, what is it? What is it that we don't have? Is it just coaching, or is there something about? I think it's also something about players, right?
But in my my high school basketball coach always said the defense is effort, offense is skill, right? And I think we have good enough athletes that we should at least be an average defensive team. At least average. We don't have to be great with the offense we have. You just need to be average, and you have a really good team. But if you can't be average,
everybody else is maybe not even average, and you've got one guy like a Jackson Emery,
it changes everything, right?
And then it only takes one guy like that, and it totally changes the complexion of a team.
We are missing a certain triple-double guy. Both sides of the court. Kyle Collinsworth, who we kind of said, we don't know how much they'll miss him. They miss him tons. He wasn't Jackson Emery good on the perimeter, but he could also guard smaller big men. He could guard the point guard. That flexibility on defense, we don't have anybody like that. Dashtrup may become that guy eventually, a defensive specialist. And I don't think we can depend on Corbin Kafusi to come in and save the day in the paint. I mean, he's going to come in and be really rusty after a season playing football. Well, so anyway. Well, Matt, coming up for the Cougars, we've got Utah State on tomorrow night. We're recording this on Tuesday night. And then, Matt, a big game against undefeated 6-0 USC. We're not going to beat USC.
No.
We didn't think that before that game, before Utah Valley.
No, but I thought there was a chance of us going into that game undefeated.
Yes, and us going in with a decent shot to beat USC. I don't give us a shot. I think we beat Utah State, though. Let's not go crazy. Utah State's not very good. So, you know, they should be able to beat Utah State, but they should have been able to beat Utah Valley.
You know what's funny is I shouldn't have the feelings that I have about Utah State. I don't want to have these feelings about Utah State.
These negative feelings?
Yes, but I want them to just obliterate those guys.
Oh, I do too. Ever since the Davies game when the Utah State fans chanted all those terrible things to Davies, I've been more against Utah State than growing up, where I was actually, I wouldn't say I ever rooted for them, but I was always kind of like, you know, they were our partners against the University of Utah. But when you talk to Utah State fans, they don't feel that way about BYU.
No, they don't.
They don't like Utah either, but they don't feel like we're... And part of it, you know, we did have a guy get fired for putting little brother up on the scoreboard, right? So
hilarious.
So apparently our fans aren't innocent either.
We had a guy fired for doing something that was hilarious.
Hilarious. So, Matt, next week we will be back on Tuesday as well. We will recap men's hoops, probably spend a lot of time, more time, talking about men's hoops next week. And we may know who the bowl opponent is, so we may get to stop speculating and start prognosticating.
For your sake, I hope that it's San Diego State.
Just because
that's going to be a lot of fun for you.
Yeah, it'll be wonderful. Do you think they'll do the Boise State rematch? They probably will, right?
If I were them, and I can't get San Diego State, I think you have to go with Boise State.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's about selling tickets, man.
It's about selling tickets in Boise
State.
Wyoming's
not going to sell tickets.
No, they can't even sell tickets in Laramie.
And if it's not Boise State, I think it would be Air Force.
I'd be okay with Air Force.
I think Air Force could do well in San Diego.
I have no, like I said before, I have no interest in Wyoming or New Mexico, but I'd be cool with Air Force. So anyway, thank you all for joining us. You can, of course, join the conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Find us on Twitter at BYU_riseshout. And then, of course, you can email us. We did have an email, long email. I totally forgot about the long email from Tim. It was basically a rant, Tim, and I agree with a lot of things that you said. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. But anyway, you can email us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. That's one word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Thank you all for downloading and listening. If you made it to the end, what should the hashtag be this week, Matt? Because this is a long show.
Oh, I'm drawing a blank.
You are drawing. You always draw a blank. Do you ever even come up with these?
No, I'm terrible at hashtags.
Let's do. I'm kind of drawing a blank. What did we just talk about? I don't want to do anything about basketball because that's just depressing.
RS draw a blank.
Hashtag RS draw a blank or just draw blank.
Now we're confusing the people.
We were going to confuse them anyway. There are always different spelling variations of every hashtag we do. How about this? Hashtag RS draw blank. There you go. There's your hashtag.
How about hashtag no hashtag? See, now I've really confused everybody.
No, don't listen to Matt. As usual, ignore Matt. That's just good advice in general. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.